Popping Collars Podcast presents T-Shirts and You, Partners in Freedom.
Hi, I'm Ricardo Avila. You may remember me from such podcasts as Popping Collars and Popping Collars.
Hi, Ricardo.
Oh, hi, Liz.
It's Betsy. I want to show everyone how much I love Popping Collars by wearing your logo on a personal item of clothing. I'm curious, how do Popping Collars T-Shirts get from your website to my door?
Whoa, whoa, whoa. Slow down, Betsy. You've just asked a mouthful. Well, it all starts here at poppingcollarspodcast.com. We let the folks at Redbubble cook up some amazing concoctions with our podcast logo, including stickers, hats, coffee mugs, and yes, even T-shirts. And when the T's are just right, they get spit out from the internet into the real world.
Ricardo, I have a friend who says there are no more T-shirts. Is he right?
No, Betsy. Your incredibly wrong friend is just ignorant and has never heard of new merchandise. We have T-shirts perpetually being made in multiple colors and multiple styles or multiple fashion tastes.
Shouldn't I just buy a book instead?
Don't kid yourself, Betsy. If books ever got the chance, they take money off you and everyone you care about, and you would never get a T-shirt.
Wow, thanks, Ricardo. I'll definitely get a T-shirt instead.
Good choice, Betsy. Good choice.
Get your T-shirt at poppingcollarspodcast.com. Just click the link at the top of the page that says Popping Collars Merch and More and follow the prompts. You'll soon be the envy of all your friends. Pop, pop.
The preceding ad is a work of fiction directly stolen from the television show The Simpsons. Popping Collars T-shirts will not make you the envy of all your friends. Books are not out to get you or your family. Greg adds these things because he thinks it's funny and doesn't consider the impact these statements have on people's livelihoods. Popping Collars is a silly little podcast that you should not take seriously, except when you should. I'm Greg.
And I'm Betsy.
And this is Going on 30, a Popping Collars side project where we have a pint of Guinness. Good old pint.
Greg, that is so stereotypical. As an Irish person, descendant.
We have a pint of heart? Would that be better?
Does it have to be alcohol, Greg? Can't we branch out? Come on. Why don't we dance a jig? That's also terrible. I'm sorry.
Where we chase leprechauns while watching movies that were nominated or should have been nominated for Best Picture 30 years ago. This month, we're looking at In the Name of the Father.
It was a time of innocence.
No property, no law, just love.
What should we call you?
Call me Wales. One.
Once upon a time, you dressed so fine. Threw the bumps of dime in your prime. Then you!
In the wake of the Guildford pub bombing deaths, the government has responded with emergency legislation and increased police powers of search and arrest.
Get him up!
I have a right to speak to my son.
You are in trouble, Conlon.
What are you charging me with?
The murders of five people.
You're out of your mind!
Who taught you how to make the bomb, Jerry?
I didn't do this! What are you trying to do to me?
Star, what are you doing in here?
Conspiracy to murder.
Their arrest was only the beginning.
My name's Giuseppe Conlon. I'm an innocent man, so's my son.
Of a remarkable journey.
All of the defendants claim that they were subjected to physical and mental abuse while under police custody.
We're never harmed in any way.
How do you find the defendants?
Guilty as charged.
From the hands of a government.
This is your home for the rest of your life.
Who knew they were innocent.
What are we going to do now?
Nothing.
To the heart of a lawyer.
This conspiracy of silence has kept my client behind bars for 14 years.
Determined to prove it.
They're as guilty as sin.
In the name of justice. In the name of truth. In the name of love. in the name of the Father.
Betsy, I have a brief description of In the Name of the Father. Would you like to hear it?
Yes.
Read it, da.
Yes, please.
A reminder to our listeners that I read these for the first time while we're recording, so I've not.
It's the best. It's the best part.
A small-time thief from Belfast, Jerry Conlon,
with the greasiest hair you've ever seen on screen.
Daniel Day-Lewis, come on, man! Like, has never met a bottle of shampoo like during the entire filming of this movie. Is falsely implicated in the IRA bombing of a pub that kills several people while he is in London. He and his four friends are coerced by British police into confessing their guilt. Jerry's father and other relatives in London are also implicated in the crime. He spends 15 years in prison with his father, trying to prove his innocence. The end. All right.
Pretty straightforward.
There's some stuff left out. I mean, it gives you the stakes, yes. This description gives you the stakes, and it kind of sets up the second half of the movie. But I guess we should say, like, lots of stuff happens to Jerry in prison. It's kind of a prison movie, in a way. I mean,
yes, it is a prison movie.
The action takes place in prison. Betsy, what's your history with the movie In the Name of the Father?
I'm still, you know, heavily in my U2 era. I had, at that point, still not gone to Ireland, but I had gone to England and had carried with me the whole time a U2 biography, just in case I ran into one of them there. Just being just, you know, over the channel. Mm-hmm. You know, why not, right? So, like, there, for me, it was this interest in the story, interest in the history of the Troubles, mm-hmm. and all of that. I think seeing that come to its fruition in the Clinton years and the trying to kind of settle some of those things, but an interest in that history. So we were still not at the peace accords, right? If I want to say that. Yeah, nowhere near that stuff. I don't think, you know, when this movie comes out.
Gosh, there were so many of those accords that happened in the 90s, like, you know, Yasser Arafat and like that.
Right.
That whole thing.
But let's say we all learn these things from pop culture. Yeah. But all of that I can be reminded of by watching Dairy Girls, which, friends, if you have not watched Dairy Girls, please, please, please pick up this show and turn on the subtitles and watch it. But it's just so good. And it kind of ends with the Clinton aspect, and it's really good.
Yeah.
But I do think I was interested as an Irish American in the history. Mm-hmm. And then you have a movie where you two, you know, Bono and Gavin Friday are involved in the soundtrack. And doing pieces of, you know, the main score, you know, the In the Name of the Father song. Bono was considered to play the role of Paul Hill in the movie, yeah. but his touring schedule did not allow that to happen. And so it was just interest in those sorts of ways. And I think then over time, through visits to the island and those sorts of things, you know, I've been to Kilimanjaro, which is where they filmed the movie. I do believe, if I'm remembering the tour at Kilimanjaro, which is a jail in Dublin, which mm-hmm. would not have been a jail that Jerry or his father or any of these people would have been kept in, because they were in England, of course, in prison. But it is a jail in Dublin that was restored, and some of the money from this film was used to restore, I think, parts of the jail to use it for filming, because it is a Victorian jail. Like, he mentions that in the film, we were kept in a Victorian jail. Yeah. And so that sort of, however, that architectural design and prison philosophy at the time is kind of in the jail. So, like, I was watching the movie, I'm like, oh, we walked around in there. We were right there. Again, this is another, as we've talked about, just strong soundtrack of a movie.
Yes.
And I enjoyed Jim, like, Sheridan as the director.
This is like peak Sinead O'Connor, because Nothing Compares to You would have been like 91, something like that. So this would have been like right before, wait a second. This would have been like right after she ripped up the picture of the Pope, right? That was like 92.
SNL?
Yeah, I think that was like 92 or something. Yeah. Wild soundtrack. I was going to ask you, like, I kept seeing Bono's name, but not U2. So this must have been like Bono.
This is Bono individually. Gavin Friday is a great friend of his who was involved in the band called the Virgin Prunes. Mm-hmm. You know, a great band name that never fully made it. And so, but Gavin is a composer and musician as well as an artist. And so they have been childhood friends. And so Gavin was involved in the soundtrack for the movie. And then he brought Bono in to do the lyrics on the, In the Name of the Father. And you can definitely hear, you know, thinking about the time and what U2 was moving into in terms of coming off, you know, off the giant success of Joshua Tree, moving into that kind of Achtung Baby time. You can hear some of that, like the static and the, like the channel changing kind of stuff in the background in there. You can hear some of that influence in that track in particular.
Yeah.
But yeah, that Sinead O'Connor song.
Oh, it's gorgeous.
Oh,
it's really pretty.
It's beautiful. It's the best song on the soundtrack. I hope you're happy now. I could never make you so. You were a hard man. No harder in this world. You made cold, and you made me hard, and you made me nothing. Oh,
yeah. Yeah, I never saw this movie. I just saw it for the first time, a few weeks ago? For this project. So I will say that what stood out to me as I was watching, I was like, oh my gosh, like this is so crazy, because Ricardo and I had just talked through a lot of this stuff for the Crying Game episode, which is yes, a queer movie, but it's really a movie about the IRA and about sort of political tension between Ireland and England, you know. It's like, I mean, that's what that movie is kind of built on. And then what was the other? We had another Irish movie, right?
We had My Left Foot.
Oh, My Left Foot.
Which was also Jim Sheridan.
But that's older. Yeah.
So yeah, that's older. Dale Lewis.
So I was just thinking, wow, we've had a lot of sort of Irish movies kind of popping up.
I will say, I think that this era is an era of age and process that rolls out over the 90s and into the 2000s, into this, you know, so we're still doing that. I mean, I think, you know, in that way, you can't compare anything to World War II and the Holocaust, because it just continues to roll out. We continue to deal with that and fascism. I think that's this is harder imprint, at least in movies. But the Irish issue and the Irish troubles and all of that really, we're still in that time of, and we still have books and movies that are coming out
at
that time, you know, that I'm able to give to my dad and read myself and, you know, as you process that. Yeah.
So no history for me with this movie other than just comparing it to other movies that we've watched as part of this project, really.
Yeah.
So what are your initial takes on the movie? What stood out to you?
Daniel Day-Lewis is too old to play this role. I'm just going to say it. I'm going to say it. He is only maybe a few.
Okay, years. I need to look up his IMDb, because I feel like this is a Daniel Day-Lewis turning point. Because I want to say, coming into this movie, he had just done Last of the Mohicans, right?
Right, I think so.
So that was sort of a big budget, like leading man, you know, romance role. And now I think starting with this movie, he's just doing all artsy movies all the time, kind of going forward, it feels like.
I mean, artsy with paychecks and major.
I'm going to get Oscar noms. Yeah, I'm going to get Oscar noms, and I'm going to be like a cobbler for the rest of my career.
Right. Kind of thing. Sure.
Yeah, so in the name of, okay, it depends on what your attitude towards the Crucible is with with Winona Ryder and all that. If that's,
well,
like
that's
a big budget.
You mean doing a movie based on his wife's father's play?
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Gets to do what he wants.
But then after that, you've got
what he wants.
The Boxer, Gangs of New York, There Will Be Blood, right. Lincoln, Phantom. I mean, you get the Daniel Day-Lewis that we know, which is the guy that does a movie every 4 or 5 years.
Yep.
And you have to refer to him in character while he's on the set at all times, you know.
Yeah. Oh, he was definitely up in his method on this one for sure. But I do think it's interesting because for Irish actors, the role of Jerry Conlon was something that was of interest and passed around for a bit, right? We should mention the Gabriel Byrne of it all.
Right. Executive producer on this movie.
Right. But a bit of a silent partner, as you and I have done some research, that Gabriel Byrne was not super hot on some of the compression of the narrative and editing of the story. And I would be interested to actually do some deeper dive on that. Because, okay, sure, you know, Jerry Conlon and his father, Giuseppe, were not kept at the same prison.
Right.
You know, and we can move into some of the nuances of the court case and these other things, but this is a really complicated situation.
Right.
It is involving a lot of people. You know, at its core, it's a story that is about a railroading through of a narrative that is looking to have somebody be in prison.
Right.
At a time when England is feeling besieged. So they've got to get somebody in jail because these people feel like they are just gone in the night, IRA operatives, and they're just doing these things and they're gone and we'll never catch them. And this terrorism.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's the key.
Seen as terrorism by the English.
Yeah,
it's
the state of fear, right? It's this idea
Absolutely.
That you can't go, you can't even go to a pub without the threat
right.
of violence. You know?
Right. And these young people and all of that. So that element, I don't know what Byrne wanted.
I think okay. So as an apologist for Gabriel Byrne,
yes, let's move in. This segment is called The Apologist.
As counsel for Gabriel Byrne.
Please. Are you Tom Wilkerson in his first big movie role? Can we name that?
Oh, I was so excited to see him.
He
when I saw him in that little wig, I was like, oh,
nowhere.
Yes.
And then we know he goes on and does like awesome stuff with like Emma Thompson. And I'm wondering, like, was this where they met? And Emma Thompson's like, hey, this dude was with me in this, like, In the Name of the Father movie. We should cast him. Anyway, all right. Aside, keep going.
Rip, okay. Rip Tom Wilkinson, man. Great, great actor.
Oh, okay. So good. Okay. For Gabriel Byrne, continue.
So I think that what you said initially is 1,000% right. This is a complex story.
Ooh.
And the narrative as it plays out in the movie is just like, it was the series of bizarre coincidences that led Jerry Conlon to be able to get his freedom, right? This is like the actual perpetrator ends up in the same prison and he's able to get Emma Thompson to do like this very dramatic thing in court. And I get it. Like it actually was very hard to get Jerry Conlon out of prison. It took a lot of people, a lot of work, actual work to make this happen, to make justice be served.
Okay.
And so I understand, I think, Gabriel Byrne's perspective of, no, don't, you can't make this guy's freedom look like it was an accident, right? You have to understand that like lots of people were working behind the scenes. But I think what I would say against Gabriel Byrne on that behalf is that we're not making a 8-part, you know, docuseries for PBS. We're making a 2-hour movie for people to sort of sit down and understand how this story is flowing. So
if this was today, this would be made as a Netflix or whoever
Right.
Multi-episode situation.
Mm-hmm.
This is what this would be. Because I could then see Jim Sheridan on the other side or whoever is kind of wanting to choose the different parts of this narrative, wanting to say, hey, we want to show Belfast pre-game. Like, this is what it looks like living in Belfast. Mm-hmm. That whole opening scene.
Oh, that's
with
what a scene. It's a,
what a scene.
Holy
what
cow.
A scene. Holy cow. Like, this is what it is to be a petty metal thief.
Right.
Who loves a good guitar solo in Belfast. And then to see how the IRA is trying to run things on the ground and how that actually works for locals on the ground and the, you know, just all of that. Once you start making your outline of this movie, the minutes are gone.
Right. Yeah.
You don't have time for the nuance. It's right. not there. And so I can see why there are a few too many coinkydinks,
right?
Shall we say, in this film, because they weren't, you know, Jerry and his father Giuseppe were not kept in the same prison for the majority of the time they were incarcerated,
right? But a movie requires there to be dramatic moments between a father and a son, like that's what the movie calls for.
Yeah. Yes. And then Jim Sheridan is also saying, hey, I really want to show some pieces of prison culture. I want to show what a riot looks like. I want to show what these pieces look like. I want to do all these pieces. So it's, I want to show what a police interrogation, which I think that was one of the more important pieces. I want to show what the Terrorism Act is doing. I want to show what those pieces look like. Mm-hmm. And I thought that, It was like, what is the most important thing? And I could see there being disagreement inside the creation. So I thought that was interesting to kind of think about as you watched the film.
Yeah. Okay. I have a few hot takes that I can get through really quickly. Scorching hot take to get us started. I think Jerry probably deserved to be in prison. I know that I know that he was imprisoned wrongly. Like, I know that he was innocent of the crime that he, but this guy was a scoundrel. He was causing problems all over the place. He needed a timeout. Jerry needed a timeout. And so it was probably a good thing for him to be in prison.
I do find it interesting that how they discuss thieving in this film.
Yeah.
Like the other guy who almost got his kneecap blown off or whatever.
Right.
He ends up eventually being like executed by the IRA, correct?
Yeah. He's right. dead.
Because he just quote unquote, like just can't stop. Like it's in his nature. Like
it's
to
in
be
my nature. That's from Crying Game. Okay, go ahead.
Thank you so much for that terrible accent. But I do find it interesting how they talk about thieving, like, you know, Jerry, why can't you get it together? That's also what I feel like for me calls out Daniel Day-Lewis being too old for this part.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, he's supposed to be like 20 years old.
Oh my gosh. No, he looks like the guy that was held back. You know, he looks like Matthew McConaughey in this movie.
Yes.
He is the McConaughey from Dazed and Confused in this movie.
One of the IMDb fun facts does call out that there is no way that, Pete, how do you say his last name?
Postlewaite.
Could be his father. Like, they are essentially separated by 12 years.
Basically,
like,
the same age.
I mean, yeah. Yes. Yeah.
When they are looking at each other in prison, I'm like, oh, these brothers are in prison together. That's pretty crazy. Okay.
He sold Jim Sheridan. He's like, but
Jerry was a scourge. He kind of needed to go away for a little while. So I didn't mind Jerry being in prison for a little bit. I was extremely depressed when Pete Postlewaite was described as being in his late 40s by the cops. He looks like an 80-year-old man. Late 40s? Are you kidding me?
He has a pulmonary issue, Greg. I don't know. It's from inhaling the stuff in the shed.
Oh my gosh. Late 40s. I that happened, and I went and I ran to the mirror as quickly as possible, and I was like, "Did you see that you have a slight acne breakout
happening across your chin, Greg?"
I do. Yes. Well, I've always
makes you look young right now.
I always have. It's because I eat too much Easter candy, and so I was
sugar.
Okay. Last thing, you know, when they go and live with the hippies, that's me. That's what I would have done. I would have probably lived with hippies too.
And with those douchebags, douchebag hippies.
Yeah. Those are my peeps. Like, I have nothing in common with them, but I love like hanging out with the artists and the hippies. As a matter of fact, Betsy.
Oh, that is, you're lying. You are lying right now. To introduce a top five, because I'm going to tell you all, Greg likes ceilings and floors, and he's not going to deal with that situation in a house.
We're going to take out the floor so that we can have heat.
Oh my God. All right. Give me your BS top five. What is it?
I got the top five hippie communes from movies.
What? Top five. You are ridiculous. All right. Go ahead.
I got an honorable mention.
Great. What is your honorable mention?
Okay, this isn't really a commune. It's just a family. And this isn't a movie, it's a TV show. It's the Keatons from Family Ties. It always cracks me up to think of them as like hippies.
That they all just can't leave that house. Well, the parents are hippies. Their son is a young Tucker Carlson, but whatever.
That's right. Okay. Oh my gosh.
Okay.
Oh.
Okay. All right, deal with yourself. Number five.
Number five is Yuppie Hippies from the movie Wanderlust with Paul Rudd and Jennifer Aniston. Came out in 2012, where they get to pretend to be hippies. You know, sometimes yuppies need to be hippies too. So,
all right, got it. Okay, number four.
Number four is Desert Hippies. As shown in the film Easy Rider.
Oh, pretty good.
Easy Rider, when Dennis Hopper and Peter Fonda end up in a commune full of hippies with their drug money in their in their gas tanks. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Number three.
Number three is Cult Hippies, as shown to us in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. On the land that Bruce Dern owned in the movie. What was the ranch that they were at? It was Manson. You're the Manson.
I am the Manson. It was Spawn Ranch.
Spawn Ranch. Where they filmed all those westerns.
That's right. Yep. Number two.
Number two is all the naked hippies that are in Hair. I went to a stage show of Hair. That's a lot of naked hippies. To be exposed to in one room.
Okay. You know. All right. Are we at number one finally?
Yeah, number one. Top five hippie commune from movies.
Okay.
Jesus and the Disciples from the movie Godspell. God.
Okay.
What a crew. Holy cow.
Okay. All right. Listen, I know we're on the heels of Easter here. I find this to be, I will say, listeners, the most suspect top five. The most suspect. Because, and it's also, I will say this, the most like, let's all go be weird together in London. I mean, they did not have a lot of time to really introduce this aspect of the whole thing.
No,
it was tough.
Not
70s. It's also a bunch of people who are wanting to participate in the hippie movement when the kind of hippie stuff is kind of over.
Well, yeah. And I love that Jerry's not necessarily interested in any of the hippie ideology. He's really interested in getting laid. Like, that's, you know.
Because he's 20 years old. He's not some 35-year-old man, as Daniel Day-Lewis looks in this movie. God bless.
Okay. So it's like post pill, like,
yeah, it just makes him look like a creepy hanger oner as opposed to like, let's go.
All right. So what's your best scene from the movie? Does it involve the hippies at all? Or
No, it does not. It does not involve them at all. It is probably a scene that Gabriel Byrne is annoyed with. That probably didn't happen. But it is the scene in the cell as Giuseppe's getting worse and sicker. And they're doing the kind of treatment with like the, you know, the, what do you call that stuff that you put on?
Oh, it's like VapoRub or something.
VapoRub, yeah. They're putting it in. And it's this caretaking kind of scene between the two of them. And talking about memory and talking about that he's been, you know, walking with his mom all the time, you know, like all this stuff, you know, it's a beautiful scene with the two of them. And it's really, you know that Giuseppe's on his way out. But it really is, it's so much also about memory and what's possible for Jerry and some of those aspects that he's kind of come through the different personas he's tried on in prison to some extent. And it has some poignancy to it, kind of knowing the other side and knowing that, you know, Jerry Conlon went through a great deal post-prison in terms of mental health and all of those issues. Yeah, I don't think you live through this experience and come out unscathed just because you have your freedom.
Right.
The torture, the time in prison, this, you know, the kind of what does it mean to be locked up for something that you didn't do, even though you carry great guilt for other things that you did do. And, you know, what is that milieu of responsibility and pain turn into inside a human being? And he definitely struggled with that in his life after being incarcerated.
Yeah.
And no amount of any of that would bring his dad back. And I think that's where, you know, the mouthful of the title of this movie comes from. It's that, you know, we do these things and they ended up staking their claim. And what made the movement move was Giuseppe's death.
Right.
It was him dying and with the English government knowing that these were people who shouldn't have been imprisoned.
Yeah. Yeah. Knowing and just digging in on their, on their big lie. Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I'm with you, and what you just said was beautiful. So I don't need to take a ton of time to just say that my best scene is probably the next scene that comes after that, which is the firelight vigil when they light the pieces of paper on fire and they throw them out of the windows of their prison cells, and it's just sort of this cascading, like, tongues of fire just kind of like falling down to the ground and stuff. It's just really beautiful, and that's in response to Giuseppe's death. It's when the prison is notified that Giuseppe's died, and they sort of do this beautiful kind of memorial to his memory. And so best performance from the movie,
I'm going Pete.
Yeah, that's the same for me.
I mean, I do think DDL, you know, he does a great job.
Yeah.
I think try to give Jerry a spirit, something of the time of a guy who's aware yet not aware of the time he's living in. You know, trying to kind of capture a time that might have happened 5 or 6 years before him, you know, with that kind of attraction to that free love type time. And is like, you know, I can live, even living in the midst of a war zone in Belfast, I can live beyond that. I'm not really participating in any of that. That's not me. That's not a part of me, right? I just happen to be here. Yeah. And he does do a good job with, I think, that detachment piece. But, you know, Pete's the heart of it. To see that adult who sees the bigger picture, who wants more, but has also been, I think it's hard to measure what his illness has done to his family. And you hear some of that heartbreak in Jerry and kind of how that has shaped their family in general. Because he does also hold his son, not in a way that he doesn't discipline him, not in a way that he doesn't demand more of him.
Right.
There's some love and excusing and guilt in Giuseppe.
Right.
That he couldn't be more, that he couldn't be well, that he couldn't.
Yeah.
Why are you looking at me like that?
What?
Why are you looking at me like that?
Like what?
Why do you always follow me? Huh? Hey, why do you always follow me when I do something wrong? Why can't you follow me when I do something right?
What are you talking about?
Huh? What am I talking about? Am I talking about the medal?
What medal?
The medal I won at football. And you were on the sidelines shouting instructions. And you could only see what I was doing wrong. I could never do anything good enough for you. And after the game, you came up to me and you said, Jerry, did you foul the ball? And I walked away from you. Do you remember now? I walked away from you into the dressing room. You followed me in there. And you said again, Jerry, did you foul the ball? And all the other fathers were in there. They were laughing at you, calling you poor Giuseppe. And I ran out and I hid. And I wrote your name on the ground. Your stupid Giuseppe fucking name. I wrote it in the dirt and I pissed on it. I pissed on it. Because I did foul the ball. What did it matter? We won. For once in our lives, we won. You ruined that medal for me. I took it to the pawn. And they laughed at me. They wouldn't even give me 50 pence for it.
This is shock.
And that's when I started to rob. The proof that I was no good.
Delayed shock.
Delayed shock. Never mind delayed shock. I've been like this since I was 7. I remember Mommy said to me, don't upset yourself, but he's not well. Not well. So tiptoe around the house like this. He's not well. Then I got Holy Communion. I thought I was eating you alive. I mean, is it my fault you weren't well? Why did you have to be sick on your life, Giuseppe? Huh? What did you have to be sick on your life for? When that mad bastard out there threatened to shoot you, I was happy. I swear to God, honest to God, I was happy. I was delighted. You know why? Because finally it was all over. It was over. You see?
I mean, when they have that exchange when they first get to prison and Daniel Day-Lewis is like, you never celebrate. Like when I was playing football and stuff, you didn't celebrate. Like, mm-hmm. When I did something good, you criticized when I did stuff wrong, right?
Yeah.
And I think that the interesting thing about the way that Pete Postlethwaite plays the character is that he never really gets angry, but he frequently gets disappointed, right? And
oh,
I think
which
that
I was oh
yeah
I respond as a rule following people pleaser. You know, that was my number one thing I didn't want to do, was disappoint my parents.
So yeah, and he does the disappointed face really well, because he's disappointed most of the movie. Mm-hmm. I think, so. Okay, Betsy, I've got some stats about the movie.
Stats.
In the Name of the Father opened on December 29th, 1993.
Merry Christmas,
Merry
Happy New Year.
Merry Christmas. Welcome to prison. This day in 90210, boop, 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 boop. We have arrived at season 4, episode 15, entitled Somewhere in the World It's Christmas.
Okay.
Our Christmas episode.
Okay. Is that
here's,
okay?
Oh, yeah.
Wait, what's happening?
Dylan is skeptical. I'll point out here that whoever wrote up this description misspelled the word skeptical. So I don't know if this is a legit. I don't know if this is legit log line for this episode or not.
Okay.
Dylan is skeptical when his father's former lover turns up with a little girl she claims is his half sister.
Oh, I remember this.
Golly, what a mess. Father's former lover with a little girl claiming to be his half sister. Okay.
Yeah.
Jeez. Meanwhile, David picks Christmas Eve to break up with Donna. Get out of here, David.
David?
Yeah. What a jerk.
He let the relationship go through Hanukkah, I noticed.
Oh, my God. Probably to focus on his rap career and his rap girlfriend that he cheated on Donna with. Gross. David, get out of here. Okay, so not a happy Christmas episode.
No, this is not great, Greg. This is not great.
In the Name of the Father had a domestic gross of $25 million, making it the number 60 grossing movie of 1993. That's actually not that bad for a little Irish movie.
That's not terrible, little Irish movie. Sure.
I know. I think that had an Oscars bump. If I had to guess, I would say it had an Oscars bump.
Mm-hmm.
It is the number 3,343rd top grossing movie of all time between...
Oh, hold on, let me get IMDb open. Okay,
I know one of these movies. I don't think I know the other.
Okay.
So the first movie is called Against All Odds.
Oh,
All Odds.
That's the movie with the great Phil Collins song, Against the Odds, right?
Oh, well, wait, yeah. Against, wait. Okay.
Against All Odds. Yeah, hold on. Yeah, this is the thing with Jeff Bridges.
Oh, I see. With Jeff Bridges. Yeah.
Rachel Ward. Little is that James Wood? James Wood.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it is. Woods, plural.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, he's the football player. I know this movie.
Hires an ex-football player to find his girlfriend.
Yeah.
When he finds her, they fall in love and the twists start to appear. Yeah, this is Against the Odds, the awesome Phil Collins song. Shouldn't I just make you turn around and see me cry?
Oh, yes.
Yes. So good. Yeah. It was Against the Odds. It's a chance I'm going to take. To take a look at me now.
We're abandoning the rest of the podcast format, and we're just going to listen to Phil Collins' music. Okay.
Okay, great.
So you get Against All Odds. Mm-hmm. Against All Odds, In the Name of the Father, and then your other movie is Winchester, God. Which is the story of the Winchester family fortune.
Mystery House?
The Winchester Mystery House, yeah. So,
I didn't know there was a movie.
They made a horror movie with Helen Mirren.
What?
Where she plays the Winchester heiress. What was her name? It was like Mrs.
Winchester. Sarah Winchester or something. Sarah. Like I have toured the Winchester Mystery House.
I've been to the Winchester Mystery House. I was going to say this. Yes. We
have both been to the Winchester Mystery House.
Karen and I did a flashlight tour of the Winchester Mystery. We went after hours. We went at nighttime. Flashlight tour. Winchester Mystery.
Okay, I'm telling you, this movie is so hard to find. I'm having to get up on Helen Mirren's. What year did it come out? What year?
This was recent. This was like maybe 10 years ago? 10 years ago?
Oh, no. That is a very scary poster.
Yeah, it's a scary poster. Yeah. For those that aren't in the know, the Winchester Mystery House, there was this Mrs. Winchester. We'll find out her first name. I'm sure
her name is Sarah. I was correct.
Sarah Winchester, inherited the Winchester Fort. So Winchester rifles, right? But she would consult mediums and sort of fortune tellers and things like this. Yep. And she had a medium that told her that as long as she that the spirits that had been killed by the Winchester rifles would haunt her unless she kept building on to her house, which was in San Jose or something.
Yes, it is in San
Jose. And so the entire time that she was alive, something was being built in her house the entire time, so that there would be stairways going to nothing, stairways going to doors that would just fall off the side of the house. There's just all kinds of just bizarre architecture in the Winchester house, because Sarah Winchester was afraid of ghosts. So there you go.
Mm-hmm.
So Against All Odds, In the Name of the Father, Winchester.
I'm going to marry In the Name of the Father, and then I'm going to flirt with Against All Odds, and then I'm going to kill Winchester because.
Wow.
There's a lot. We got to get rid of that.
Poor Sarah. Poor Sarah Winchester. She tried to avoid this fate, but she couldn't.
She couldn't. I came for her in the end. And
we are for all
those people who Winchester rifles kill, Greg.
We are 100%. We are 100% opposite of each other on this.
What?
It's so crazy. Usually we're like right in line with all of these picks.
One off. Okay, like,
yeah, but we are 100% off. I would flirt with Winchester. I'm just totally fascinated by the concept of that movie. Okay. I'm sure it sucks. I'm sure it's like an actual movie. It's terrible. But like, I love the idea.
Okay.
I'm marrying Against All Odds. That movie is bad. Like, that looks bad.
Okay, fine. Okay. And you're going to kill in the name of the
Father. I'm
going to
kill in the name of the Father.
Greg! That is terrible, Greg. You can't even handle Is it Daniel Day-Lewis's hair?
In the Name of the Father doesn't have any football playing Jeff Bridges in it.
Oh, God. Greg, you can't allow that to be your total message behind this movie just because
the man looks
good in shoulder pads.
I may, for this episode, instead of having the poster for In the Name of the Father, I may just have this picture on IMDb of Jeff Bridges in shoulder pads.
You cannot do that. That will confuse our listeners. Greg, that's a no.
What a movie.
What a movie.
Against all odds. I'm going to watch it tonight after we're done recording.
Taking me back to 1984. Oh, my Lord.
In the Name of the Father has a 94% on Rotten Tomatoes. And I killed
it. That is not bad.
4%.
That is not 94%? I feel like people haven't updated that. Like,
people love this movie.
I feel like people, maybe after listening to our podcast, people will revisit this rating. And I worry it will go down a little bit here and there.
People love this movie. Roger Ebert.
Oh, Rog. In the city of the Irish, in Chicago, what will he do?
He actually, well, from the sentence that I got from his write-up of this movie, he wasn't, this is not about the movie. This is about an actor. So, in brackets, Day-Lewis proves here once again that he is one of the most talented and interesting actors of his generation. 3 out of 4 stars.
Okay.
So he's putting it all on DDL.
I will say, on the poster for this movie, they try to really do a cheekbone off with between Daniel Day-Lewis and Pete. The last thing
possibly.
Because Bosley. They really try. Like, they give, evidently Day-Lewis lost a bunch of weight
His
meta business to play this part.
Yeah.
For sure. Like, that's in the IMDb fun
facts. Yeah. Okay, so but Betsy, you're gonna be excited because I think I found someone who's in the 6% of the Rotten Tomatoes that's on the other side of this movie.
Oh, who is it? Is Rita, it one of our female?
Yeah, Rita Kimpley. Rita Kimpley. Okay.
What's Rita saying?
She fired this one off. You ready?
Okay.
The film takes forever to do what 60 Minutes does with the same meat in a single segment.
Oh, no.
No star rating.
Hold on. No. Did she just not give it a rating, or did she give it no stars?
No, she didn't give it no stars. There's just not a rating. She just says,
the
film is long, and she would just she would prefer it in a 20-minute, 60-minute segment. That's all.
That's a lot of shade, Rita.
How did it do at the Oscars? Betsy, it had no wins at the Oscars.
No wins. How many nominations did it have?
Well, so it was nominated for Best Picture, but in addition to being nominated for Best Picture, it
has many more?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 more nominations.
Oh, no. 6?
Yeah, it had 6 nominations, came up empty. Actually, 7 nominations and came up empty. This was like the
The
killer of the flower moon of its time.
DDL and Pete.
That's right.
Daniel and Pete both got nominated, right? Yes?
Yes. Daniel Day-Lewis and Pete Postlethwaite, Best Actor and Best Supporting Actor.
Okay. Yeah. Did Emma Thompson get nominated for supporting?
Yes. Best Supporting Actress, Emma Thompson.
Okay. So that's 3 of 6?
She was a Oscar darling at this time. Yeah. So that's 3 of the 6. Yep.
Okay. Sound?
No, not
thinking
sound.
Of the sound. Okay.
No, not sound.
I was thinking that was must have been really.
I see what you're thinking. Yeah, with the
all the prison stuff. I can't imagine especially after being in Kilimanjaro, trying to do any sort of sound in that giant open air space. I have to imagine that would have been really in courtroom scenes.
Yeah,
that's really hard. Yeah. But it's not enough action.
Yeah.
Because things weren't nuanced.
So you still have one of the major awards here.
I mean, Best Picture we already talked about, right?
Right.
Best Director?
Yeah, Jim Sheridan was nominated for Best Director.
Okay.
So then you have two below the line. Well,
Adapted?
Yeah, Adapted Screenplay.
From Jerry's book.
And then one more below the line.
Set stuff?
No. Although I could see that.
Okay, Okay, give it to me.
Editing, film editing.
Yeah.
Up for,
yeah.
A statement, my lord, which vindicates all of these people, all these innocent people.
My lord,
people,
I need to see a copy of
someone,
this statement.
Either that man or his superior or his superior's superior ordered that these people be used as scapegoats by a nation that was baying for blood.
My lord!
In return for the innocent blood spilled on the streets of Guildford. And by God,
Mrs.
you've got
Pierce
your
is
blood,
making
Mr.
a political
Nixon.
Speech. This is
you've
outrageous.
You've got the blood of Giuseppe Conlon. You've got the lifeblood of Carol Richardson, and you've got 15 years of blood and sweat and pain from my client, whose only crime was he was bloody well Irish, and he was foolish, and he was in the wrong place at the wrong time.
Mrs. Pierce, I will have you removed from the court.
Okay, what is the lasting legacy of this movie? I just wrote down War on Terror / Homeland Security. I mean, this is incredible. Watching a movie from 1993. Yes. And then knowing that we have the Patriot Act coming
yep.
for our country in
not
8 years. Yeah, 8 years forward yeah. from this movie.
Yes.
And just thinking of like how radically different America was as far as like post 9/11 attacks, as far as the amount of ability we gave the government to get into our right like
uh-huh.
this movie had its finger on that like way before, and it felt like such a foreign concept, and boy, like post Patriot Act, it really hits home of like, oh my God, this could happen anywhere, including in America, right?
Uh-huh. The ongoing trajectory that pop culture will, the story that it will tell you about the Irish English relationship and occupation, and however you want to, whatever wording choices and how we're going to frame that history we want to look at. Mm-hmm. Like you can look at like Victoria on, I think it's on PBS, right? And you can look at how the Irish famine is framed, and you're like, oh
right.
my God, mm-hmm. this is horrible, mm-hmm. right? And then I can watch The Crown and be excited about that. You know, like, how am I holding all of this stuff, all this history, all these narratives, and allowing that to be together? Like, I was just reading a beautiful obituary for, you know, a clergy person from Alabama who I had known, and his son was a camper with me, and his mother had just passed recently. They were both Irish, and just, you know, the moment when... You know, they were both Catholic, and she was a nun and he was a priest, and they fell in love. And they fell in love in Alabama. Like, they both come over here on missions mm-hmm. from Ireland and to be in the States. And, you know, he comes home one day and is like, hey, you know, I could join the Episcopal Church and still be a priest. And she's like, the people who persecuted us all those years, like yeah. that narrative and the story and how you work on that. That's still playing out. You know, we're still looking at, you know, what is the makeup of the Belfast government, of the Northern Ireland government?
Right.
Between Sinn Féin and this, like, all of this is still happening. You know, there's yeah. just an article this week about the fact that the records building in Belfast was burned during mm-hmm. the 23 Civil War. And they're finally really getting a handle around the digital archives and recreating some of those pieces. It's a living history of a country at war,
right,
with itself and with its occupier. And so it's you know, and then you look at Gaza and you look at these other, I mean, it's
right.
it is
yeah.
this whole kind of play out of those pieces, you know. And it reminds me of when we came back from our trip to Ireland 2 summers ago for my father's 80th birthday, and able to go to like the last place that his family, you know, we didn't own land, we leased land, you know, and we weren't wealthy, and we eventually had to leave, and it was unsustainable to stay. And that my, you know, that Ruby, my child, was like, you know, I really have a better understanding of what it means to say I'm Irish.
Yeah.
And it's not just about Shamrocks and leprechauns and, you know, your pipes again, it's Greg and your stereo.
It's all jokes.
Right.
All jokes.
I know. But that it is about knowing where you're from and what that is and what that can mean when you get outside those boundaries. And for Jerry, when he finds himself out of bounds and you become susceptible.
Yeah.
And I think there's a lot of amazing and terrifying narratives that we can happen upon where people find themselves out of bounds. Mm-hmm. At the wrong place at the wrong time, mm-hmm. and you become wrapped into something that you never dreamed.
Yep. And it's the way that power works. I mean, like, you know, the way that it will go out of its way to convince itself of its own truth, right?
Yes.
You know,
I think the most terrifying detective was that bald detective. He was like, right. You want me to go in? I can make him.
Yeah.
And it was just threatening his father. And that was terrifying. Those scenes were really difficult.
I mean, that's the thing, right? It's like, and you brought up Gaza, and that was kind of where I was going to go. It's like this, it's this idea of who exists in power, who writes the history, mm-hmm. dictates a lot of how these things are seen sort of historically, right? And who is a terrorist and who is a freedom fighter and who is a rioter and who is a rebel. You know, and who, you know, like, all of these things are, they depend on power and who holds power, right? Mm-hmm. And the really frightening thing is when someone gets power and will do anything anything to hold on to what it is that they have, right? Anything, including, like, I don't know. Something like attacking the capital of the country that you say that you are in charge of, you know, or something. It's ridiculous, you know, these kinds of actions. And yet these people can convince themselves that they were right all along, and they can convince others that they were right all along and that they didn't actually do anything wrong the entire time. It's amazing. The human capacity to forget what doesn't fit into your narrative and embrace lies that convince you of your rightness. It's wild. Mm-hmm. It's wild.
Yeah.
Yeah. This movie, ahead of its time. As I was watching it, I was just like, holy crap, this is 2001 America. We're about to have like all of these conversations. And this is Zero Dark 30, you know, that we're kind of watching play out here. It's amazing.
Yeah. And also ahead of the use of dry shampoo.
Yeah.
Could have used some.
Take a bath, Daniel Day-Lewis. Come on.
No, I'm not telling him to take a bath. Just a little dry shampoo. That's fine. Whatever. That's good.
This is another reason he needed to go to prison. Going back to my hot take, because he needed the de-lousing. He needed it.
Oh, my God. Stop it.
All right. Who is this movie for, Betsy?
If we're thinking about a culture, American culture, movie culture, that was starting to be interested in international stories and stories of freedom in other places, you could think about kind of a, you know, an early precursor of that being like The Killing Fields. And so, and kind of taking that forward. Kind of then moving into ideas of like the Free Tibet movement and other things that come later in the 1990s. Yeah, I think about it as a real attempt to make a movie in the midst of history.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is not settled. And it's still probably, I would not be considered settled, but it is more settled now than it was. More settled now than it was at the time of the making of filming of this film, releasing this film. It's easy to see it as prophetic now.
Just as a movie, I would say this movie is for the Academy, right? It's like, it's for people who want to think that movies matter, you know, like that kind of, like the way that the Academy talks about movies when they run those montages and stuff. These are the kinds of movies that I think they're talking about. Like movies.
Well, and Jim Sheridan is a sneaky smart dude.
Yeah.
It allowed him to make the movie he wanted to make.
Mm-hmm.
Do what he wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
Great. You know? Like.
Yeah. What is your rating for this movie out of 5?
So I'm going to give In the Name of the Father a 4.
Okay. Above or below The Fugitive?
That is so tough.
The Fugitive is 13 DVDs of The Fugitive out of 10.
I know.
So
I know. I'm going to give it a 4 below The Fugitive. What are you giving it?
I'm going a little bit lower. I'm going with a 3.
Okay.
And which isn't to say that I don't like the movie, but I think that when it's going, it's good. When the movie is going, it's a pretty gripping movie. And that doesn't mean just like all action or anything. It just means like energy. When it has energy, it's going really well. But it just ultimately, it just kind of gets too long. It just kind of like
down.
Yeah, just kind of runs out of juice a few times. And it's like, man, we could really probably get to the courtroom now, you know?
Yeah, I got you.
Take a beat before getting there kind of thing. So, yeah.
Okay.
So 3 out of 5 for me.
Okay, awesome.
Why did the Academy nominate that? I think we've talked through it. Yeah. It's an important movie. They wanted to nominate an important movie, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
And the cast, like, the, you know, it's a great cast to have at your Oscar ceremony, you know. What did Emily say about this movie? She have thoughts?
Oh, crap, I didn't ask her.
I know. I was about to say. I don't know.
Oh, no. I mean, we're going to have to do a double catch-up on the next episode. Okay.
All right.
With Emily. What is our next movie, Greg?
Well, one last question. What did Whoopi Goldberg say about this in her Oscars monologue? I don't know. This would be... Would she talk about In the Name of the Father? Let's see. If she does, then you'll hear her right here.
Tonight we gather to honor Hollywood's best, which is also the world's best. People came from all over the world to make movies, and those movies are seen all over the world. We live in a global multiplex. The movies this year covered oppression, abuse, revolution, people being wrongly accused, people being tortured, people fleeing for their lives, and that was just what's love got to do with it. You know?
Okay, that is it. In the Name of the Father, in the books.
We did it.
Out of sight. Next up, Betsy, it is the number one movie of 1993. Welcome to Jurassic Park.
Listen, Amber has never gotten more of a bump than after Jurassic Park. I want some Amber jewelry, Mom, from the gift shop.
It's got to have a mosquito in it, you know.
It's got to have a mosquito in it.
Next up is Jurassic Park for us. Wow, what a movie.
Wow.
What a movie. Lots of thoughts.
I can hear the talons on the aluminum table soundtrack.
Can you do a Velociraptor impression?
I really need something to blow through to really do it, Greg. I need like the voice box.
I think I can do it. It's kind of like
You sound like a seal on Pier 57 or whatever that was.
But then you've got to do like a snake kind of thing, like.
Okay, that part was better than the previous part. Let me rewatch, and then I will bring the goods.
All right. Awesome.
Okay. That's a promise.
Okay. Betsy, thank you for springing me out of jail on this episode. Appreciate it.
I'm going out the front door, Greg.
That's right. We're walking out the front door of this podcast. That's right.
That's right.
In the matter of Her Majesty versus Gerard Patrick Conlon, the case is hereby dismissed.
Free man, and I'm going out the front door.
Where should we go now? Like Burger King or something? Like what are we gonna do now?
I think I'm gonna go to the pub.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
That's a good call.
We end where we begin.
All right. That's what we'll see. We'll go to the pub, and we will see you, good listener, next time.
Bye. Beside me, yeah.